Is your business struggling? Do you need a custom business plan to get ahead? All you need to do is ask Sharifa, the premier business consultant who is focused on your success. From digital marketing to business planning, I bring over 25 years of experience to work for you. As a host of three different talk shows, I can get you connected to your audience right away. Visit AskSharifa.com for more information. Do not face the unknown alone. Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today, and you know what day it is. It's Friday, and you know what that means. I didn't tell my guests, but like I always tell you, there are two shows you do not want to be on, my Monday show and my Friday show. Mondays, I had way too much sleep. Friday, I haven't had enough sleep. And you know what that means? It means I have absolutely no idea what I'm going to say. But do I ever? No. That's why you enjoy the show. You enjoy the spontaneity, the unorganized ability to just bring it all together. But I'm going to ask you to do what I ask you to do every day, Monday through Friday, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's some entrepreneur, some business owner, there's someone who wants to improve their life. There's someone who wants to overcome some struggle, some journey, something that we can help them with. But they won't have that information unless you go ahead and share it with them. Because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going ahead and sharing the show with your friends, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Ms. Danielle Matthew. Danielle is a licensed marriage and family therapist who treats bully victims and their families and educates schools, medical professionals, and the community about the bullying epidemic. With over 20 years of experience, Danielle authored Amazon parenting bestseller, The Empowered Child, How to Help Your Child Cope, Communicate, and Conquer Bullying, and is the director of the Empowerment Space Bullying Therapy Program in Los Angeles. Good morning, Danielle. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. Bullying, I think that is so important, such an important topic. Tell us about your passion.
So my passion started because I was a kid who was bullied. And so I really know what it felt like and the emotionality that comes with being bullied. And if you don't get help for it, it can really hurt you in your young, older years as well as your younger years. So my passion came from being a child who was bullied and how it felt. And then in my adult years, I started a program. And from this program, I was told if I want to speak, I should write a book. So I wrote The Empowered Child from a week of my 10-week program that I initially wrote called The Empowerment Space. And I help bully victims. And I also help young adults. And I do a lot with anxiety and depression. And right now, I'm really involved in the aftermath of what's going to happen with kids who go back into schools as the coronavirus hopefully decreases and we get kids back into a new normal. So I'm really working on some stuff with colleagues on a national bill to help educate teachers in the classroom about mental health issues that potentially are coming down the pike with kids coming back to school and trauma and what's associated with what kids are going to have. And I'm also writing with another colleague of mine a presentation right now of how to help adolescents with social and emotional learning to launch to adulthood and what that looks like, especially when they've been caught in the pandemic and lost out on certain rites of passage. So my passion is really the kids, the adolescents, helping them. And whether it's bullying or anxiety or depression, I have such a passion right now, a commitment to getting us through this pandemic, the kids. And making sure that they can successfully launch to the next life of what they have in their stage with the new normal. So that's where my passion lies and what I'm really excited about and glad I could share some of this today on your show. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Absolutely. It's a very important topic. So many questions come to mind. The first one that I want to ask is, do you feel or do you believe that bullying is so much worse in today's age than it was prior? There's so many people who say, okay, well, there's always been bullying, but people say that it's worse now because back, you know, years ago, if you were bullied at school, you could go home, you had this safety net of your family, your house, you didn't have to worry about. Now, with the invention of the internet, it's like 24/7. Every time they try to go online, they try to go to their social media, the people, the bullies still have communication with them.
That is correct. So would I say bullying is worse? I wouldn't say it was worse. I think we've had it's always been a problem, but I think what's worse is that it can go into the homes now. So before, when I was young, it would happen at school, or someone would hurt my feelings, or they would tease me or run away from me, and verbally bully me. But now, yes, to your point, we have cyberbullying, and relational bullying has also gotten worse, especially with adolescent girls. I've seen that. Usually in middle school it starts, where they are, write stuff on Snapchat or other social media sites, and they don't let other people see what they're writing about them and not including them. So I think between social media and relational bullying, the cyberbullying online and not including kids and being really mean and spiteful with the relational bullying, I think those pieces have intensified, is what I would say. I think bullying has always been an issue, but now we have more arenas where it can be worse and we can't get away from it.
I completely agree. Now, I'm in Long Beach, California, in Los Angeles County, and maybe about 10 years ago, there was a huge K through 12 push in California. I don't know what it was like in the rest of the nation, but that was to get a focus on homeschool and to have more kids at home. And I had a friend, I always share their story even on the show, and this is like 10 years ago. We were having a discussion on homeschooling. I'm like, no, the kids need the social aspect of being in school. She was like, no, it's fine or whatever. So her son wound up being the valedictorian for his class. He came up to the stage, went to give his speech, looked out at the crowd, broke down in tears, and ran off the stage. And I was like, I think I kind of proved my point. He's so smart, but yet it's the social aspect. So I, for one, am very concerned about the social aspect of all the homeschooling for children.
Yes, I would agree. And so, to your point, that's what's happening right now, correct? With this pandemic, where they're all homeschooling, they're all doing social distance learning. And so, what's happening is there's a breakdown in connection and socializing. And so, what happens is kids get very scared to go back out there if they don't slowly get used to it again. And so, they forget what the socializing and connection looks like, and they can get paranoid, they can get scared and worried. And so, when a kid is being bullied, though, and is in homeschool, to go back to that, or has bullying issues, I do recommend kids, to your point, go back into a school environment again, even if they need some help first to learn some social skills and slowly getting back into a stimulus that feels overwhelming and flooding for them. I think it's really, really important that kids do get back into a social environment. And if it's not going to be school, then something else in their life should be in a social component, whether it's an activity or something. But yes, to your point, I think kids need to learn how to socialize. And this is what I'm worried about right now, is all these kids have been home and social distance learning for what, over almost a year now. And so I hope they can all come back into a way where they can feel comfortable and re-engage, especially in the new normal, what will be in their classrooms. So yes, I am a proponent of absolutely socializing is key.
Absolutely. Danielle, I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Michael Hinkson. Michael, blind since birth, was born to sighted parents who raised him with a can-do attitude. Michael rode a bike and learned to do advanced math in his head. He moved to California and attended college, receiving a master's degree in physics and a secondary teaching credential. Michael worked for high-tech companies, mostly in management roles, until September 11, 2001. When he and his guide dog, Roselle, escaped from the 78th floor of Tower One in the World Trade Center. Wow. Good morning, Michael. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
Us, is that your dog or the
That
rest of
is
the guests?
actually Roselle, who was with me in the World Trade Center. That's the background.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Michael, what are you passionate about?
Equality, inclusion, accessibility. Actually, some things have happened to me pretty much even since we originally began corresponding. I have now been hired by a company called Accessibility to be the chief vision officer, a title I created. It's a C-level position. It's a company that makes internet sites accessible using artificial intelligence. The problem that we have today in the world with the internet is, as somebody quoted a study that I listened to recently, the average individual visits maybe 90 or 100 websites a month, while the number of websites being created are like 350 plus a minute. Websites are proliferating very quickly, and the problem is that they're not being made accessible, even though today it's the law. It is not only the law, but the courts have indicated that the internet is a place of reasonable accommodation. And so Accessibe, rather than requiring someone to go in and do the coding to make the website accessible and spend a bunch of money to do it, Accessibe uses an artificial intelligence process to create what some people would call an overlay, which is something that communicates with the web browser that makes the website look accessible without having to go in and do all the work that normally would be done. And the bottom line is the experience of accessibility suddenly becomes available to any blind person or any person with a disability who needs to visit the website. So that's become a great passion of mine. But for me overall, my passion would have to be that we need to be a more inclusive and tolerant society. Danielle talking about bullying certainly is a part of it. We traditionally exclude persons with disabilities. If you go listen or watch anyone who talks about diversity, you very rarely see them talk about blindness or any other physical disability. You've got, for example, today, the Me Too movement and Time's Up and other things where they're talking about equality in Hollywood. You don't hear about people talking about disabilities for that. And the bottom line is that we tend to be excluded. It's not necessarily malicious, but it happens.
So what, I mean, the question that I want to ask, and I have to figure out how to phrase this, is what would you like to have happen? But I think there's a certain expectation of what an ideal, perfect world would be. Because when you mention, like in Hollywood and other places, we don't mention these disabilities, I would agree. But for, you know, for someone who is sighted or someone who doesn't have those disabilities, it's not, and I don't think it's a right or wrong or mean or bad thing, it's just not at the forefront of our attention. So we need people such as yourself to say, hey, you forgot this, let's make this world more equal and equitable for everyone.
That's a part of it. The issue, however, is that when you start to do that, you start getting pushback. So, for example, I contacted someone who had sent me an email about purchasing an app or purchasing an app that would help develop apps. And I said, your app's not accessible. And the response was, well, we'll take you off the list. And if the day ever comes that we make an app that will be accessible, then I'll recontact you. Excuse me, why aren't you doing that from the outset? And you're right. Part of it has to be that we need to reach out. But the other part of it is that there has been enough visibility for persons with disabilities in one way or another over the years that we should be seeing more than we do. How many department stores, you can ask people in wheelchairs, how many department stores do you go into where the aisles are too narrow because they're stuffing them too full of material so people can't go down the aisles? How many times do you find websites that are not accessible? The Americans with Disabilities Act has been in existence for 30 years, and even the government hasn't really created standards for it yet. So the problem is that society needs to recognize that disability doesn't mean we don't have ability. We need to change what that word really means. It's a characteristic. We tend to have differences, but everyone in this world has gifts, right? We all have different gifts. Not many people can do math in their head. And I know you mentioned that earlier. Not many people can have a master's degree in physics. Could you learn it? Possibly or possibly not. We all have gifts, and we should be acknowledged and not marginalized because of the gifts that we have.
I have a question.
Absolutely.
Michael, so I have 4 websites, and I also teach entrepreneurs about making their own websites. And I'm ignorant to this. What can I do as someone that has websites, make it more accessible to someone like you?
You know, it's real easy now. And I'm going to talk about Accessibe because of what I mentioned. If you go to Accessibe, it's Accessibe.com. You can actually even sign up and try it for 7 days without using it. The cost to make reasonably simple websites, and a simple website is under 1,000 pages, so most of us are in that position. The cost is $49 a month. And why is it a monthly charge? Because when you sign up, you will, based on whatever platform you're using to create your website, you will get a line of code that you will put into your website, and then the system will do the rest. So it, would it be great if you learned a lot about accessibility and so on? Yes, but you don't have the time to do that. So Accessibility really handles that. So once you put in the line of code, it will go analyze the site. And then whenever someone comes on your sites who happens to have any kind of a disability, let's say a blind person with a screen reader, and this is how I actually found the company. I happened to go to a website that that had Accessibility on it. And the first thing I heard was, if you're using a screen reader, press Alt and the number one. I did that and the website just became completely and totally accessible. And I know it became accessible because I had been there before and not been able to use it well. So it's $49 a month because once you make your website accessible using the product, it will monitor your site on an ongoing daily basis. And if you make changes, if you add images, it will actually try to describe the images, although it doesn't necessarily always do the greatest job of that because it doesn't know what you mean. For example, on my website, after I made it accessible with Accessibility, I was scrolling down the site and suddenly heard it say something like, man in white dress shirt holding yellow Labrador retriever. Now, what that picture really showed was Michael Hinkson hugging Roselle, but it actually came up with those words and described it. Then we got someone to go in and change the description of the image to Michael Hinkson hugging Roselle. Accessibility recognized that we made that change, so it won't deal with it anymore. It'll let it go. But Accessibility monitors your site ongoing so that it will continue to be accessible. And if you want to chat about it more, you know, we can offline after the show.
Absolutely. I'm going to come back to you, Michael. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, this lovely young lady. We've been emailing and corresponding for months now, and she is definitely amazing, Miss Dana Humphrey. In her social circles, friends describe Dana as a psychonaut. She spent her childhood dragging her family to church. Dana is passionate about self-development and spiritual growth, and over the past 20 years has explored many different energetic healing modalities revolving around sound, breath, and movement to find her inner guidance, or GU self, RU teacher. Some modalities of interest have been Reiki, various forms of meditation, including Vipassana, Tantra, Tarot, yoga, breathwork, song, plant medicine, and dance. Dana has traveled to more than 80 countries and lived in 5. Good morning, Dana. How are you?
Good morning. Fabulous. Thank you, Sharifa.
See, I was trying to pronounce all those big words, all too many big words.
You got them. You got most of them.
You know, your bio, when you sent it over, was completely different than what I expected, which is, I love the unexpected, though, because I kind of tend to assume, like all people, and it's like, I thought it was going to be all this PR, all this, you know, this is what I do. And it almost went from, that's your day job, and this is who you are as a person, if I'm reading that correctly.
That's right. I have a few different bios. This is the new one, the new and improved one.
I like it. I like it. So you do Reiki.
I do, yeah.
I was watching some movie yesterday on Reiki. I think I was watching The Affair, the series. Okay. I don't know if anyone has seen it. And someone was doing Reiki on there. And I was like, well, that's kind of cool. How did you get into it?
So I'm a yoga nut. I go to hot yoga, Bikram, every day. And the studio where I practice had a Reiki session. And so I went and studied level one and level two. And now I do Reiki shares, and I can do Reiki on individuals or long distance. So we could do a distance session with you. But really it just helps move energy. I often see a lot of colors when I do a session on someone, and that can kind of indicate where they might have some blockages in their chakras or what's kind of happening with them.
Okay, so why does it intrigue you? Why are you so interested by it?
I was first introduced to Reiki from a friend of mine, and she did a session on me, and I really did feel a difference. Mm-hmm. And so since then, I've been interested. And I love that you can do it anywhere, anytime. You don't really need anything. You just need your hands. So it doesn't need like a lot of props or equipment or anything like that. So mm-hmm. I also give it to my cats.
I've never heard that in my life. You do Reiki on your cats?
Yeah, they like it. They love it.
How do you know that it's, I don't know. I don't want to say it's working.
So I can tell when they don't want something, right? They're like squirming around trying to get away. If when I first got the cats, it was like 4th of July. So there was a lot of fireworks. It was like really hectic. And so I just kind of put my hands on either side of their body and I give them some symbols basically. And, you know, I'm not like trapping them tightly. I'm just gently kind of holding them. If they wanted to get away, they could. And they don't. They like to, they stay for it. So that's how I know that they're like responding to it. Otherwise, you know, they would just go play, go jump around. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, you know, some just like us, like sometimes they're in the mood for it, sometimes they're not. But if something's going on with them and I want them to be a little calmer, I might give them some.
Mm-hmm. So what about the other modalities? What is your other favorite modality?
I love to dance. I love dancing, moving my body. You know, I don't do any specific style of dance. It's not like the two-step or anything like that. But I'm part of something called the conscious dance movement. And basically, it's like just free-flowing movement to feel better in my body.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Dana, I'm going to come back to you.
All right.
I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Robert Kinget. Robert is a totally blind author, an accessibility advocate. He writes fiction and nonfiction, but is often involved in many consulting positions. He contributes to many research papers in his spare time. Even though Kinget works on several short stories and many books alongside editing anthologies, he always makes time to read a book or check out a podcast. He loves audiobooks, fiction podcasts, and movies and TV shows with audio description. Good morning, Robert. How are you?
Very good. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Cool beans. Yay. Yay. So how are you?
Robert, I am fine. Robert, you're listening to audiobooks, writing books, doing consulting, all of this. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got here.
Oh, my Lord. Like it actually happened by quite an accident, rather. I started a blog and I thought, well, you know, I'm quite a socialist, so why don't I rant and rave about how disability is hampered by capitalism, and so I just started publishing on to the web, and that's how I kind of got a following. And I got involved in quite a bit of advocacy campaigns because I care very much about how society progresses in terms of inclusivity and accessibility. Plus, I care very deeply about disability representation and in government, in media. So basically, I just catch shouting into the void, and someone paid attention. So yeah, basically.
So when they paid attention, what happened? What changed?
I Lord have mercy. Like I got a literary agent. I got more contracts, and lots of people said, "Well, you actually have." You actually have a lot of things of value to say that we never really thought about before, which is how the advocacy just kind of grew and grew. I lots of companies, they really value my put, and when I do accessibility consulting, and this is where I'm going to push back on Michael just a little bit, even though I love his work and what he does. My approach to disability advocacy is all about education. I think that you having knowledge about accessibility is much better than a line of code tacked on to a website. Yeah, so so, but like I said, I mean, I loved love what he does, and it's especially his book. I think he wrote the book Thunder Dog. Is that you, or is that another person?
That's mine. Thunder Dog was a number one New York Times bestseller. We wrote it. It's about my story, and it's about the World Trade Center and our escape from that. And then Running with Roselle was kind of a kid's book version.
Right.
And Robert, I don't disagree with you, but I would say the line of code isn't the issue. The issue is that we're not getting web, from a website standpoint, we're not getting websites accessible. And the fact is that people aren't doing it. And this is another solution that will at least bring the accessibility to websites. What will then happen from that is that people will use websites, and that will help expose others to the whole concept of disabilities. But I think that education is extremely important. But I also think that given that there are laws, we have the right to expect people not only to obey the laws, but we have the right to expect the government, as it promised to do in 2010, for example, to create web accessibility standards. So I don't think that the burden needs to be or should totally be on us. But I recognize that in your and my case, being blind, we're a low incidence disability.
Right.
The world needs to know that 20% of all people have some sort of disability. And we really need to be collectively more aware of that and not ignore it, because it's not going to go away.
Right.
So
yeah.
Let me just ask you this question, Michael. I have two quick questions on the same topic. Number one, you have mentioned several times about the laws. And usually when websites are concerned, there's something, some notification that comes up that says you have to follow this law. That's why you see all the privacy acts or the little except at the bottom of the website. So I haven't seen that. But then also from a small business perspective, when I look at the cost that I incur to have a website, for me to pay any additional cost, when I would say maybe 1% of all of my website visitors, at least in my mind, would have that kind of disability, but yet I would be paying a reoccurring monthly charge.
Fair questions. So first of all, the issue with the law is that if you go back to 1990, the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed. And for years, companies said, well, but that doesn't mean our internet sites have to be accessible, because the internet came around after the ADA. And courts over time disagreed and said the ADA does not specify that it has to be brick and mortar. And it was only in 2017 and 2018 that we started to see some really substantive cases that have said the internet is a place of reasonable accommodation, even though in fact it was the law. In 2010, the government passed standards that said all government websites need to be accessible, and put Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act in place and so on. But guess what? Most websites in the government today aren't accessible either. It just isn't happening because it's not a priority. And Robert's right, it's partly education. but it is also partly that people ought to recognize it's the right thing to do. You don't know that 1% of your users have a disability. And when I talked about accessibility, I'm talking about all disabilities are represented. If you're an epileptic or person with epilepsy, for example, and you go to a website where suddenly a pop-up appears and it's noticed by you because it blinks, that could cause seizures. Accessibility mm-hmm. has a methodology to address that. If you're a blind person that goes to a website and you're using a screen reader and you try to access menus that don't have proper alt tags or are not properly arranged for a person with a screen reader to be able to use them, or if you're a person with dyslexia, you may not be able to use a website in the same way that you as a person who doesn't have dyslexia or who is not blind would use it. And the problem is you don't know who's going to come to your site. So you do pay money to have your website constructed, and you will pay, typically when people have to hard code it in, you will pay a significant amount more to make that website accessible. And then it will break as soon as you make any changes to it, unless whoever does your further coding addresses it by making sure that they put in the appropriate alt tags. And most coders don't know how to do it. So the fact is that there is a technology today that, although it does cost $49 a month, it opens up your website to as many as 20% more people than you would have otherwise been able to access before, because it makes the websites accessible to all persons, including people who happen to have a disability. Website accessibility is an experience. It's not just some code or a law. It's all about experience. And you don't know how many people are not experiencing your website because they can't.
Wonderful.
And you may never know that. I mean, unless they feed it back to you, you won't even know that. So yes, it's the right thing to do to make sure that you include everyone. And that's what inclusion is about.
Absolutely. I definitely agree.
But I do agree with Robert. I mean, it is education and we're all working at that. Robert yes. is a great writer. Right. And I get his emails all the time.
So I wanted to ask you, Robert, just because we're having this conversation, I typically wouldn't ask this question, but were you ever bullied in school?
Yes, I was. Because I have a speech disability, so lots of people thought that, because he has a speech disability, then he doesn't have any logical thoughts or tangible thoughts. So it just kind of, it left me extremely, isolated, which I guess is a very tangential way of kind of saying, yeah, I was kind of bullied and kind of ostracized.
If we're going to educate people, we got to educate people that there's nothing wrong with being different.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And as adults,
definitely.
As adults, we know that, and we like diversity, and we like people who are different. Kids don't tend to be that way. When someone is different than them, it's hard for them to sometimes understand it. And so what they do is they try to figure it out by bullying. And I don't think it's right, and I agree with what you're saying, Michael. I think that that's a real issue, is that kids have to learn to accept more diversity, I think. And I think when they don't understand something and it's uncomfortable for them, I think that's when the bullying can also happen.
I do wish it were just kids, although parents may, or adults may not bully as much, but adults deal with it in other ways, and they oftentimes don't tolerate difference very well. I mean, we see it all the time. Look at our political world. We're dealing with people who won't tolerate other religions, and that goes on all sides, by the way, but we don't tolerate difference nearly as much as we should. As I said, it's all about gifts, and each of us has gifts, and we ought to be accepted and have the right to use those gifts and use them well.
I agree.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Dana, were you ever bullied?
Yeah, I was bullied. I was a quiet kid. I was like always reading. I was like always in the classroom reading, and I was bullied.
It's so horrible how common it is. That's kind of how I'm asking is because most people you'll find they'll have some story in their past from somewhere where they were bullied. And I like Danielle and all of us, we have to do something about it. I remember being bullied when I was in junior high school. And but see, I'm the wrong person to bully. But the little girl, whenever I try to read my book, she would come up, she'd take the book for me and she'd throw it across the room. I'd be writing and then she'd come, take my pencil, break it in half. And then she caught me on the wrong day at the wrong time. And she reached for my pencil. I reached for her arm and all of a sudden, all you heard was crack, like the sound of her arm cracking.
Oh my gosh.
And it was just like a natural thing, like she, but it was weeks and, you know, time.
That's right. To your point, that's so what happens when someone's bullied over and over again, and they, you know, by definition, bullying is when it's repetitive and when someone has power over someone else. And by that time that the person's been bullied so much, they snap, right? So it's kind of like what you're describing is you snapped because you had enough of it already, and that's how you knew how to lash out. And sometimes what ends up happening is the kids who are the ones who snap get in more trouble.
Yeah.
Bully kids don't get noticed, and then they get to get away with their behavior because the one that snaps is the one people focus on.
Sharifa, I had the same thing happen. I was bullied, and then I ended up breaking this kid's arm by accident. Yeah. You know, I tripped him. We were playing soccer, and I tripped him, and he broke his arm. And then, honestly, after that, I didn't get bullied anymore, but I did get in trouble. I definitely got in trouble that day.
I didn't get in trouble. That was the thing in my life. Yep. You know, well, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but I hardly ever get in trouble because I don't bother anybody. I leave everybody alone. And after that situation happened with that young lady, she left me alone. Everyone in the class left me alone. It was like the Red Sea's party when I walked. Everybody's like, don't go mess with Sharifa. But my parents didn't, you know, I was suspended for I think like 3 or 4 days.
That's
my
trouble.
No, the school suspended me.
I got in trouble with school. My parents didn't care.
Yeah, they didn't. They knew. Like,
you're telling me. Dana, let me ask you a question. Do you feel like sometimes now in your adult life, it gets re-triggered for you, those feelings that of how people made you feel when you were younger? Do you ever feel like that comes up even in your adult life now?
I think I've worked through a lot of it. Okay. I think I've worked through a lot of it. But yeah, there's times when I get on the defense for sure. But I think I've done some like humiliation work. I think I've come to terms with a lot of it.
And what is humiliation work? I've never heard of humiliation work. I've heard of like deep soul work.
Specifically asking to be humiliated. So then it becomes a consent.
Wow.
Mm. Is this like between you? This is new. This is some good stuff.
I haven't heard of this either.
I've never heard of this.
I've never heard of it either. That sounds almost like bullying you all over again and re-traumatizing you.
Right.
But if it's in consent, then so you let it. So when it's in consent and I ask for it, I'm in a place where I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you ask the person to say it, whatever the triggering thing is, over and over and over and over and over again until that pain dissolves. You reach a point where it becomes funny because you're no longer like affected by it. You keep hearing it and hearing it, and then it just dissolves into something else. So I've done a lot of that, and I do think that it's helped me.
Mm-hmm. So where do you go to get humiliation work? Like, is there a humiliation school? I'm trying to learn.
It's something to do with like a trusted friend or a trusted partner, you know, that, you know, you need that trust to be there so that it does feel safe, so that it doesn't become a re-triggering or like a re-traumatization. You have to have that like consent and boundary that, you know, I'm going to ask for it. There's a kind of like a certain protocol that goes on. But you can do it in groups. You can do it one-on-one. I found it to be a really powerful exercise. A lot of people don't like to do it. They don't like to lean into it. So sometimes I find it hard to find someone that wants to practice with me, but
where do you find them? This sounds like some Craigslist stuff. Like, you just got to go
Yeah, it sounds way too Craigslist-y.
I've never gone to Craigslist to find a partner with that. It's more like a friend that you trust, or I would maybe feel comfortable like with my sister, like someone that, you know, I think actually Craigslist, until you develop that trusted relationship with them, it might not be the right space for that.
No, it sounds good. I don't mean to insult anyone by saying Craigslist, but it's like you can find everything on Craigslist. All those,
yeah, there's probably a humiliation school there. Sure.
Yes.
You know, the idea of your concept about trust is absolutely vital, but you know, we as a society don't really encourage, I think especially guys, but we don't encourage people to talk. We don't mm-hmm. encourage people to talk about feelings and emotions. You know, I hear all the time about toxic people who are losing their eyesight or who have lost their eyesight, and they're discouraged from talking about it, from moving forward, from dealing with it. And it's out of fear. And a lot of times we don't talk because of fear. And we need to break that down and recognize that the fear is more in our own mind. And we can use that fear and learn to control that fear to help us move forward much more than we do. And we need to learn to at least be open to trust and to developing those relationships so we can talk about it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And I think once you're in a place where you can talk about it, then you've healed it, right? And I think that helps.
Right.
It all helps.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you know, even when we talk about issues, yes, we can work them through and they can feel less painful and fearful, to Michael's point. But I have to tell you, even I work with people as young adults who've worked on stuff, it still gets triggered. I will be honest with you, I got triggered 4 or 5 years ago at a wedding, and I hadn't seen some of these people in years that I went to school with. And I have had a lot of work on myself, and I'm a bullying expert. But all those old feelings of being bullied came right back to me about feeling inadequate and not good enough around this group of people who weren't being terrible or anything, but just it wasn't gelling for me. So it can just, and it comes quickly sometimes, and you have to do all your self-talk and, you know, all your deep breathing and
tools
done in your stuff and your tools. But I have to tell you, and even with people I work with, young adults, even teenagers who were previously bullied, it still comes up and it can still be triggering. So that's an element that unfortunately doesn't quite go away the way we'd love it to.
But
no,
also
but you can mitigate a lot of it,
yes,
at least by working at it. But no, I mean, it's,
right.
And you know what? Fear, for example, isn't something that will or should go away. To say I'm fearless, I'm not afraid of anything, is just as wrong and just as unhelpful as being overly afraid. I think that fear is something that you can use. If you learn to control fear, you use it to help you move in the direction that you want to move, but you have to learn to take control of it. And that's not an easy thing to do because we don't teach people.
I agree.
Right.
And then, it's like stage fright, you know, you can feel the butterflies and feel afraid when you're about to go on stage, or you can harness that energy and channel it and turn it into something amazing and have all this like power and strength in your delivery.
Well, look at us now in our society, right? We've got the coronavirus. So if we take that as just an example, right? There's a lot of fear about what's happening and different variants and stuff. And so how do you take your power back? And to Michael's point, I think we can't be dictated by fear. We have to be educated and careful and safe, but we also can't be dictated by it. And to his point, I agree with you, Michael, because I got, at times I'd be more fearful about the virus, and I'd hear stories and how California would open and close since I live in Los Angeles. And it was just hard. And I finally had to get to a point, to all of your points, is that you can't let fear take you over. And you have to decide, I'm going to take some of the control back of my life.
Yeah. So we decided early on that when the virus hit, we just decided, okay, we're hearing from the scientific community, best to not go out in big groups, wear a mask, you know, and at first they didn't say wear a mask, but I don't think they had all the information that they needed to make good decisions either.
Right.
But then that came along and so wear a mask. And we, my wife and I decided we're not going to go out. We can live here. We like each other and, and we can have fights, but we can get along and we'll stay inside. We don't even go to reasonably small family gatherings because of the danger. And even now we've started getting our vaccinations. We got our vaccinations, our first vaccinations yesterday up here. And it's a long
one. I just got mine too.
Did you?
Hey. Me three.
We need to have a club.
I know, right?
But you know, we made the decision. We're not going to let this beat us.
Yes.
And we can work very well from home. But it's all a matter of not letting the fear take over. You know, when if you ask people what's one of the biggest fears that we all face, I think Gallup polling organization, not counting virus and so on, would say public speaking is something that people fear more than anything else. They're afraid to get up in front of a crowd. Now, personally, that doesn't bother me. And I do a lot of it. After September 11th, the first speech I gave, this pastor called me up and said, we're doing an ecumenical service for all the people we lost in New Jersey. Would you come and tell us your story? Because it had gotten around and Larry King had had us on and so on. So I said, sure, we'll go on and we'll do it. By the way, how large is the service going to be? Because it's going to be outside. And he said, oh, we'll probably have at least 5,000 people. So, you know, what do you do? It's not magical. What I knew and put into practice was, I'm just talking to each and every one of those people, although they happen to be collectively together. So I had a device that allowed me not to be afraid of it. And that's something that we can all learn, that there are techniques and there are methods that we can use that allow us to overcome and take control of the fears that we face. But we need to be open to looking for those methods.
Right. And that's what I do in my work, to answer your question too. In my bullying work, I use a lot of empowerment skills to help kids have their voice again because they feel very pushed down and depressed.
And I think Robert had something to say. I'm sorry.
I actually had a question, I guess. Do you think the problem or part of the problem of bullying is that maybe as a society we're too hyper focused on ourselves and not each other, because I mean the nature of capitalism basically tells all of us that consolidation of wealth and power isn't like a positive thing. So maybe part of the problem is maybe that we don't care enough about each other.
I think there are a lot of different things that are going into play, and I think that was an excellent question. Not to cut you off, Dana, but even before this, one of the things that I was going to say, I don't think it's only the fear, but one of the things that I'm passionate about is PTSD. As a society, we just said, okay, the only people who suffer from PTSD were vets, and that's it. And what we're seeing during this global pandemic as a whole is that we're looking around and saying, wait a minute, we're all traumatized. We're all affected. And in the past, we haven't had the opportunity to actually grieve or to deal with whatever traumas. We didn't have what Dana said, you know, the humiliation and going through it. And so now we're realizing what we used to do in the past. Even if you lost a parent, they'll give you, what, 3 bereavement days? They tell you to get over it and get back to work. So part of our society was just telling people to get over it. That's kind of what Michael was saying earlier, as far as the way people deal with disabilities, is really just get over it. And I think we need to heal the trauma and not just send out a message to get over it. Mm-hmm. Dana, you were going to say something?
Yeah, it just makes me think of the this expression of the golden rule of, like, you know, a lot of times people think about treating people the way that I want to be treated, but really it's the golden rule is really treating people the way that they want to be treated.
Right.
And that goes back to your point, Sharifa. It's like, yeah, we all have stuff, right? We all maybe were bullied, maybe some more than others. We all have different problems. But if we can understand that and have a little compassion for each other, then we can treat each other the way that we want to be treated.
Right. And I think that's a part of it is also people don't have self-compassion. So if we don't start with self-compassion, it's really hard then to have compassion for others, because you'll be surprised, but maybe not a lot of the kids that probably were the bullies are the ones that have the low self-esteems. They're the ones that truly don't feel good about themselves. And to Robert's point, you know, with the world and how people view each other and how much money or power they have, it's like a self-esteem thing, you know. And sometimes the kids who are the biggest bullies are the ones who have the worst self-esteem around. So what I teach my clients a lot, even my bullied clients, is about self-compassion. And how do we even take, you know, because that's where all the negative thoughts start. And then those come out behaviorally to other people, as we're talking about. So it's that really being available for yourself to really be okay and let things go.
One of the things that I notice regularly is that we don't always learn from our mistakes. And the reason I think we don't is that we have not collectively or mostly individually learned to be self-analytical. When I was the program director of our college radio station, KUCI at UC Irvine, I wanted every person who went on the air to listen to their shows, because I felt that if they listen to their shows, that we are always our own worst critic. And so we're afraid to put ourselves in a position of having us criticize ourselves. So we don't listen to shows that we do. We don't analyze the things that we do to see what we could do better. Well, I had everyone listen to shows. They resisted. So finally, we set up a system where their voices were automatically recorded, and we gave them the cassettes, and we said, you've got to listen to it. Well, the days of cassettes, long gone. 8 tracks. But you know what? By the end of the year, most of the people who listened to their own work were infinitely better. I mean, it wasn't just a little bit. They were incredibly better because they took the time. And some of those people went on to careers in radio and television. But we, in general, don't look at what we do. And one of the things that I like to do at the end of every day is to think back on what I did today, especially those things that really come to mind.
Yeah.
Did I do it right? What could I have done better? And I don't take a lot of time doing it. And I also don't beat myself up over it, because I probably did that a lot during the day. But during the time of self-reflection, it is, what do I do different next time? And if you do that regularly, and that's probably in a sense part of meditation, but if you do it regularly, you will find that you're able to move forward and you won't make a lot of the same mistakes again.
Yes, absolutely. Go ahead, Dana. You have something to say?
Well, I'm writing a memoir right now, and it's so true. Just even like as I'm putting together my different chapters and my different points and my different stories about my life, I'm seeing parts of my own story where I'm connecting the dots, where I'm like, oh, I didn't learn the lesson there, so I had to do it again. And then I finally got the lesson. And, you know, it's something that I thought that I knew, but now that I'm really like spelling it out and going over it, it's like the gears are shifting and clicking in a new way. And I think this self-analysis process is huge. It's like, it's awareness, right? It's like our own self-awareness.
Yes,
absolutely. Now, I have truly enjoyed this show. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Robert.
Okay. So what I think everybody should take away is just try to have compassion and empathy. So, yeah.
Beautiful. If they want more information about you, how can they find you, Robert?
The easiest place is to go to my website, which is blindjournalist.wordpress.com.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Dana, what do you have for us?
All right. I'm just writing down Robert's website there. I think to sum it up, this is my favorite quote, and I think it really sums up what we've been talking about today. It's, don't copy the world. Be a different person with a fresh newness in all you do and think. And just celebrate yourself, celebrate life, live each day like it's golden, and celebrate each other.
Powerful, powerful words. Michael, what do you have for us?
One of my favorite quotes, I'm prejudiced because it was a quote I put in Thunderdog, says, don't let your sight get in the way of your vision. Mm. But you can expand that. We all have vision and can expand our vision and should. We all need to work together. We're all part of the same spaceship Earth. And I hope that people will learn that just because some of us are different than others of us, or that we have other needs, it's perfectly appropriate to respect that, whether it be doing what you need to do to make your website accessible, to just understanding that people may not be the same as you because they have some so-called disability. People can mostly learn about me at www.michaelhingson.com. And I have been starting to work on a program dealing with this whole issue of fear, so they can go visit www.blindedbyfear.net. That's another place people can go. Of course, they can go to www.accessibility.com to learn about web accessibility. But if anyone wants to contact me, I'm easy to reach. It's contact@michaelhingson.com, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Michael. Danielle, what do you have for us?
I think an eighth grade teacher of mine told me knowledge is power, and the more knowledge you have, then you have power to make change happen, whether it's in bullying or other parts of our life or helping kids, which is a big thing for me. The more I learn, the more I can help and educate. And if anyone wants to find information about me, they can go to my website, which is www.empowerment.space. And thanks for having me today.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. Incredible, incredible show. I love the way it just all comes together. And I've learned over 200 episodes that it always does. You think you have so many people who are different, that they're diverse, that they couldn't possibly relate to each other. But then when they sit down in an organic roundtable conversation, we find out that we have more in common than we have that is different. And I think that is so beautiful. And I think that's telling of the human spirit. That's why I love and truly enjoy doing this show, because it empowers other people to bring us together as a society. Now, I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show, but I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching this show in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show does not mean you're not important. I still appreciate you. I still need your support, still need you to go ahead and share the show. But as always, please don't just watch the show. Please don't just share the show. Visit our guests, support our guests. Their website links are in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Send them a tweet. Send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed weekend. Bye now.
Struggling to increase your sales or website conversions? Are you looking for new ways to promote your business through social media or any other campaign? If yes, then you're at the right place. Ask Sharifa has 25 years of experience and the track record to guide you to success. From business planning to social media marketing, from website designing to website development, from search engine optimization to paid traffic, we will research your business, your products and/or services, and the competition to develop a custom growth strategy for your business. Contact us now, and we will help you bring your business growth to the next level. For more information, visit www.asksharifa.com.